You're listening to the 2020 Network presented by Interac. Did you know that you can now pay with Interac debit on your mobile or wearable device? Visit interac.ca for more info. Hey there, I'm Sarah Turnbull. Welcome to 2020 Live. We've got a bit of a different lineup on this episode. Last week, we traveled to Toronto for Elevate Tech Fest. This is the second year it's taken place, and man, oh man, has it grown drastically. There were a ton of interesting entrepreneurs, venture capitalists, tech enthusiasts, each with fascinating stories of how they got to where they are today. We've long wanted to go mobile with the 2020 Network, and this was our sort of first opportunity to do so. You'll hear snippets from Aaron Reynolds, Alex Patterson, and my own interviews with various folks attending the conference. To start it off, here's Shopify CEO Toby Lutka in conversation with Alex.
I've always been really curious about this, particularly with the Trudeau government's hyper-focused on digital, particularly from an economic development perspective and an industrial policy perspective. Digital and data, it's so cross-cutting, mm-hmm. right? And so you can have a digital table, you can author a digital report, but so many of the other industries around it, that's a big part of their pivots as they're looking forward. So how did you interact with, or did you interact with sort of the agri-foods, the manufacturings, the other sort of traditional industries that are thinking about the next 10, 20, 50 years of their time and operation in Canada?
Well, right. And we did that. We organized what's called all chair meetings, where like the various chairs of the different tables came together and talked. And the conversation definitely went into, you know, here's what we do about our things. And, you know, like some people want shovel ready sites, you know, some people want more infrastructure investments in general, some people need wireless spectrum. But everyone says, we need to figure out how to make software work for us. And so this is why there are some probably rather surprising recommendations in our report. We can go into some details, but like one of the probably more surprising things when you look for it is one part is about how we become a digital society in Canada that actually really, really embraces technology. And you know, so much of a most important technology in the world was invented in Canada, and most people don't even know it. But what we actually need to do is we need to get Canadians to actually reconnect with how innovative of a country this really is. Yet 54% of people actually would say that in Canada that the pace of change is too fast. And by the way, it's never going to be as slow as today. And, you know, and tomorrow yep. it's going to be yeah. the slowest. And then the day afterwards, it's going to be faster yet, and so on and so on. So it's this is accelerating no matter what we do. The only choice we have is what kind of can we play an outsized role in it? Again, technology is big and there's an enormous amount of complexity. And I think there's not enough time spent making it accessible to most people, right? Because like let's take Shopify. For those who don't know, Shopify has you know 600-something thousand merchants around the world are using Shopify to have online stores, sell their products, and
I think our producer Aaron's one of them actually.
Yeah, all right, yeah. Yeah. Nice, yeah. Super. And here's what's but that's what Shopify is. The more interesting question is why does it exist? And the reason why it exists is the following. Entrepreneurship is really, really, really important. Like I'm the kind of person, like I needed at some point in my life to go myself and reach for some kind of independence because I just don't fit into, you know, kindergarten to high school to like university to IBM job to hopefully a promotion. It just is not my world. And that's true for a certain percentage of people. And so I wanted to own my own thing, and I built an online store back then selling snowboards here in Canada, and I found the entire journey was amazing, but the only reason why I could do it is because I'm a computer programmer. It was technically implausible for anyone who wasn't to start this in 2004. That's not right. That's bad.
Next up, we spoke with Ray Reddy, founder and CEO of the social food ordering app Ritual. He spoke about the value of the newly assembled tech ecosystem in Toronto and all of the pieces that are now in place.
For these things to work, for an ecosystem to develop, it almost is it's like a marketplace that has to come together.
Yeah.
And it's one part planned and one part almost like, to some degree, almost like serendipity that just needs to happen. And sometimes all the things can be there, but they don't come together in the right way. And what I mean by that is there's a combination of like a deep talent pool in Toronto.
Yep.
Because of the universities, that has resulted in like, you know, great entrepreneurs. And prior, in the last 10 years, the funding really hasn't been there. So it's been really hard to get, you know, versus like the Valley and other ecosystems. It's been hard to get a startup off the ground. You'd really spend a lot of time on the administrative side of trying to raise capital.
Yes.
What we're seeing now is even the people in the city are much more adopting homegrown technology a lot faster. You'll see, you know, the government's trying to, you know, the mayor over the last few years has involved so many companies in city-run initiatives, which is really a win-win for both people, efficiency from a government standpoint, and a way to like really highlight the ecosystem. So it really does feel. I guess the only way to describe it is it feels like everyone is aligned and wants the same outcome. My story is that I actually worked for Google in the Valley and left Silicon Valley to come back to Toronto to build this company. So this was not accidental. It was a very intentional choice to say, we want to build a global company in Toronto. And the difference in the ecosystem even 5 years ago was very significant. I actually built my first company in Toronto 10 years ago. That was in 2008. That was acquired by Google, and that's how I ended up in the Valley. And I think that even 5 years ago, even though the ecosystem wasn't as mature as it is today, you could see where that trend line was going, right? And even today, you can see it's not quite. We haven't made it yet, but you can see the trajectory. And I think that what separates Toronto from everything else is that the trajectory line, the slope of that line, is unlike any other city I've seen.
Michelle Romano, serial entrepreneur and dragon on CBC's hit The Dragon's Den, also stopped by. She was speaking at the conference about the rise of blockchain innovation.
We have some of the strongest talent right now in blockchain, which is likely going to be the next internet, the next big piece of technology that takes over. Ethereum today, by market cap, even at its low point, if you were to rank it on the TSX, would be the 20th largest Canadian company. This was developed by an engineer at King & Spadina. Like, there is no question that we already have this talent. These companies are now going to other jurisdictions to incorporate, where Canada is not getting any of the benefit of having trained these extraordinary engineers. And I appreciate that it's a hard space. It's a hard space to understand. It's a hard space to regulate. But if Canada doesn't get its act together, it's going to lose, you know, really the next generation of companies.
Do you think that story is being told outside of this community? Do you think that's translating into, you know, Canadians outside of like the Toronto tech bubble?
No. I don't think people appreciate how big this movement, how much wealth it has already created, and how important it's going to be for us to have our Canadian talent building Canadian companies. And this is one of the big challenges in this new tech world. When you don't have resources, when you don't have physical space that needs to be in a certain country, you have an unlimited, amount of options to be used on where you incorporate. Anyway, so I think this is super important. We have the talent here. We are building, Ethereum, Aon, Polymath. Like, there's so many incredible companies that have already been built here. It's really now a matter of the Canadian government needs to make it very clear how we're going to regulate these companies so they can stay here.
Talk to me about where we were in 2 years ago, to where we are now.
Yeah.
Are we seeing more women found their own companies, start their own companies, and be supported in the community?
Yeah, so this was last June, so kind of a year and 3 months ago. And we've actually seen a lot of success with that. So when you look at all of the ClearBank metrics, we funded 8 times more women than the industry standard that VCs have done. And we've done it because we've taken a lot of the bias out of decision making. We've integrated direct into platforms to see it. And we've always known that women can build great companies. It was about finding and sourcing them. And so we're really excited about the progress we've made so far, have a ton of awesome success stories, and just excited to keep going.
Michelle, thank you very much for what I'm sure is like a packed dance card today.
No,
so thank
problem.
You for taking some time for us.
Aaron Reynolds also spoke with Jeremy Shackey, co-founder and CEO of Lighthouse Labs, an intensive coding bootcamp program.
coming to an event like this, do you feel like you're seeing your alumni here, or do you feel like...
We were actually just sitting with one alumni who just happened to be there, and another one just met me at the door when I came out and came to say hi. We have a lot of alumni here. They progress really quickly. They enter into this tech scene, and they're usually big contributors and members of it. Mm-hmm. So you see them all over the place, and it's fantastic.
Well, that's fantastic. And how does that feel? How does that feel as this is your baby, and you're seeing people that you have... given a set of tools to, and now they're out here applying it and doing something with it.
By far the best part. It feels pretty amazing to see all these people who you actually, because they're in your space for 10 weeks and you, yeah. I sit in an open desk, I'm able to talk to a lot of them, you become quite familiar with them and their personalities and their backgrounds, and then seeing them kind of hit their own levels of success and what they do with it is very fulfilling. It's also like a large experiment in how all these human beings progress in life, and you get to see these different levels, which is pretty impressive.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I know about Lighthouse Labs because I ran into Izzy at a conference called Fireside Conference a couple years ago, and so he connected us today. And I remember seeing something on Izzy's social media about Hour of Code and a large number of kids being in the space.
Yep.
At Lighthouse Labs. What was that like? Tell me about that.
Well, so we're really lucky. We do a ton of community initiatives. We're a part of what we do is connecting with all different levels of people who want to learn and all different levels of people who are looking for people to learn. So all these companies that are here, we also talk to a lot. I get to meet so many interesting people. But when you do events for kids, it's something that probably for our staff is the one that fuels them the most and makes them the most excited, because you see children and you just realize, A, how quickly they can grasp stuff. Like stuff that we teach adults, right, that take twice as long for adults. And really, it's because of the doubt or fear or intimidation of adults. Kids just don't have it. And then kids are really into creating. And so they get something and they're immediately thinking about all the awesome things they can build that would be useless for everybody and yet so much fun and so thoughtful and imaginative that you're like, actually, these are the best ideas I've heard, period. And I can't believe nobody thought about these types of things. And so kids just get, their enthusiasm rubs off a lot. Code can be, well, it's kind of like math. It can either be a subject that's very dull, or it can be a subject that's really exciting. And a large part of that is the enthusiasm of the people you're teaching. And children just love it. And we're very lucky to kind of get the opportunity to be able to teach kids.
Right.
Next up in the hot seat, Janet Bannister, a partner at Real Ventures, which invests in early stage, primarily Canadian-based tech companies.
Real Ventures was founded in 2007, so 11 years ago. It was founded originally in Montreal by three guys who looked around the city of Montreal and said, hey, you know what? There's just really not that much of a startup ecosystem here. We have a great city with great potential, but we do not have the infrastructure for tech entrepreneurs to start and grow their businesses. And so they really started with that. In 2007, they raised a $5 million fund that was entirely invested on the within the city of Montreal. And they invested in these early stage tech companies and started to provide the guidance, the capital, the community that's necessary for those companies to flourish.
Wow.
And then in 2010, Real raised a $50 million fund. And again, we doubled on their efforts to grow the ecosystem.
Wow.
And then in 2014, we raised a $90 million fund. And last year, we closed $180 million. So we've continually been growing the size of our funds. But one thing that has never changed is our absolute commitment to growing the ecosystem.
Right.
We are firm believers that a rising tide lifts all boats,
yes,
and so we are very involved in the ecosystem in terms of helping to make sure that Canada as a whole has an extremely vibrant tech ecosystem, that helping to ensure that Canada is a place where great entrepreneurs can launch businesses, scale businesses, and grow their businesses in Canada.
Are we there yet?
We're certainly getting there. I mean, to your question earlier around capital, and you know, it used to be, hey, if you were raising money in Canada, you had to go down to the Valley. And now, certainly, there's a lot more capital in Canada. And there's also, I think we've reached a tipping point where people around the world are recognizing the vibrancy and the strength of our ecosystem, and they are coming to Canada. So we're here at Elevate this week. Yesterday, I met with half a dozen New York venture capitalists, many of whom were making the trip to Toronto for the first time, and were here specifically to find local companies that they wanted to invest in. So we're absolutely getting a lot stronger in that, and I think it's a product product of the ambitions of the founders, that now we're seeing founders who believe that they can build a huge company and want to build a huge company. We're seeing much more talent in the ecosystem, not only technical talent, but also marketing, sales, business development talent. And finally, the funding, right? It's a great funding environment.
It's not just beyond the money, right? It's a connection, too.
Absolutely. 100%. It's all about the connection. And one thing that's interesting about Real Ventures is everybody at Real Ventures comes from an operating or entrepreneurial background. So we have all been there, we've done that, we've built businesses, and we understand the challenges that are inherent in that. And so,
there are many.
There are many, and they never end. And so we work very hard with our entrepreneurs to help them. And I think that as an entrepreneur, if you're looking to raise money, you know, the key is it's not just about taking the money from anybody. It's not just about taking the money from the firm that offers you the highest valuation. You are really forming a long-term relationship with a partner, and you want to understand what value can that partner provide. Mm-hmm. And, for instance, you know, at Real Ventures, we view it very much, hey, our mission is to help that entrepreneur however that means. And if that means, you know, being a shoulder to cry on at 2 in the morning, that's great. And if that means helping to interview sales candidate, that's great. If that means going over their financial model, that's good too. It's like whatever they need, either we are there to help or we are there to find the best person who can help that entrepreneur and help their team.
Does it just give you so much pleasure to be helping these people? I mean, there must be some real personal stories that you have of those late night calls, and you know that kind of stuff. Like it must give you
absolutely. I must say, I have been very fortunate in the types of things that I've done in my career, but I've never been happier, and I've never had more of a sense of personal satisfaction. And it's because I feel that I'm able to help people, who help these entrepreneurs, and I have so much respect for entrepreneurs who are out there working hard, putting themselves on the line every day. And I think, you know, if I can help that person in any way, be it sitting down with them, going over a problem, brainstorming solutions, thinking through strategic alternatives, introducing them to the right people, whatever I can do, I honestly just feel so grateful to have this opportunity to do what I do.
We caught up with Jesse Chapins of Sidewalk Labs, the company working with Google to transform part of Toronto's waterfront into a smart community at Design Exchange. You are the director of public realm and culture at Sidewalk Labs. What does that mean exactly?
So my focus at Sidewalk Labs is leading our work around how we build shared spaces for the community. That is the public realm, and fundamentally it's about culture. So it's about the parks, it's about the streets, it's actually also about all the ground floor spaces that the public has access to. It's about spaces inside buildings that people can interact with. It's the water itself. Mm. And then it's thinking about how does that contribute to a participatory culture where people have agency in new ways over how they can contribute to their communities, how they can stage art installations, how they can create markets, how they can really make space usable for themselves and create a new type of urban culture in these environments.
And how does technology play a part in all of this? I know that's kind of a broad question, but or data or, you know, yeah.
There's a bunch of different ways. You know, I think one of the fundamental things is that it's never about technology first. So my background is in urban design and planning, though I have also worked for 15 years in the technology industry. And what that has meant is that I've really kind of approached this work with Sidewalk first and foremost with how do we create extraordinary urban experiences, spaces that meet the needs of people in new ways, opportunities to bring people together. I think actually in this era where technology is even more a part of our lives, it becomes that much more important for how we design the built environment for face-to-face interaction, how we get people more out of their homes, off of their screens, engaging in kind of live human interaction.
That's shocking.
Is that much more important? And technology has a role to play in that. I think so. Some of the things that we're working on are looking differently at the way pavement works. Pavement is a technology. It hasn't always involved digital technology, but it is sort of one of the most fundamental technologies of cities. It's the way in which you create the surface that the whole city runs on. And so can we think about a different paving system that is built in a way that is much more flexible and modular than the way paving normally works today? Allows for pavers to be individually removed just by one person. So if there's a pothole, you can easily fix it. You don't have to have a road crew come and make a change. If you need to have utility wiring underneath your pavement, the way that it normally works today is you have to do huge cuts to like pull up your asphalt. Moving and changing new infrastructure, if you have new technologies that come along, new broadband speeds and things like that, it's really cumbersome.
Yeah.
If that is underneath this removable paving system, suddenly it's much easier to change and adapt.
There's been controversy around that it's going to require a lot of people's data to contribute to the process and the success of it.
Mm-hmm.
What do you, when you hear those arguments, what do you think?
I think a couple of different things. One is I think it's actually an extraordinary opportunity that we have here to demonstrate how we can think differently about and set new standards and innovate on the role of how we think about data in public life. And I think that we have an opportunity to do things here and innovate on policy.
Yeah.
Canada's already doing this, actually, with a national data strategy, and this is sort of aligned with how we actually can be really proactive and think about those structures.
Yeah.
So I see it as an innovation opportunity to think about what models we can set in place for a future that protects privacy and really focuses on responsible data use, that is focused on how any data that is used is sort of in service of public interest and public impact. That's one piece. The other thing is when I hear about those conversations, I think it's an important topic, but it misses at times sort of the broader picture and limits the discussion to exclusively data as the only way to make city life better. That's not at all what the exclusive focus of Sidewalk is. You know, as you know, I was even describing pavement, innovations in pavement, looking at new kind of structures, ways to build buildings out of wood. There's a whole range of ways that we believe technology broadly defined and innovation can improve city life.
That's cool.
And I want to make sure that that is really the discussion we're having.
To cap it off, we were joined by Oscar Roque, AVP of Mobile Products and Platform at Interac. He spoke to us about the Toronto Tech Talent Pool and the future of blockchain.
This festival, Toronto's largest around technology, is a great show of that.
Yeah.
The fact that we actually have all these great talents that are born, bred, and nurtured here is actually just a tremendous feat for Toronto as a whole.
It really is. We had an Explain Like I'm 5 episode on blockchain, and it was fascinating to me. And it feels like it's still a bit confusing, but I want to know what, for someone in it, what excites you going forward? What are you excited about in this industry?
I think in blockchain, what really excites me is the ability to just create net new use cases. Sure, there are use cases out there that replace existing models, if you will, but I'm really excited for, I'm going to make a kind of a little bit of an analogy, like the Netflix of blockchain. You know, when the internet was being formed in the 60s and the 70s, nobody actually thought about video streaming, right? And so I'm really excited for the new models that could evolve because of that.
And that's it. That's the 2020 Network Gone Mobile at Elevate Tech Fest. We hope you enjoyed.